You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The third fate was added contractually for a short period of time because they had essentially planned for the situation that happened, but with a different fate. Like, there were two fates out. And our two swings, one of them also had to go on for Eurydice, so there weren't enough fates in the building. So I was relearning how to play the violin, because I played once when I was in fourth grade and had to relearn the things you never knew you would need to know how to do.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to Built for the Stage podcast. This is Joe Roscoe, founder of Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you like the podcast, please rate, subscribe, leave a comment. That'd be greatly appreciated. Special thanks to our producing team, the Broadway Podcast Network. You can check them out at bpn.fm. If you haven't tried a free trial yet of Built for the Stage, go to the website, builtforthestage.com. Or follow us on the gram at Built for the Stage, and you'll be on your way with 7 days of working with your own Broadway fitness trainer and just seeing what it'd be like to work one-on-one on an interactive fitness app. All right, special guest, as always, super excited. Our guest was previously seen in Sister Act, Lion King, and is now going to be returning to the marvelous show, Hadestown. Please welcome to Built for the Stage podcast, Kimberly Marable. Hi, Kimberly.
Hello. How you doing, Joe?
I'm actually really good now. It is Monday for everyone that's listening. We're recording on a Monday. I had a very busy weekend, so I woke up a little bit with the Monday blues of like, oh, got so much to do today. But your smile through this screen here and our conversation is definitely making the day a lot better. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It is definitely Monday, so I can appreciate what you're saying.
So before we hit record, we were saying a bit that you're actually originally from New York, and we were talking about, you know, all things pandemic and leaving or staying and staying and going and yada yada. Where are you originally from in New York?
Yeah, I'm from Brooklyn originally. My folks are still there. I'm in Harlem now. The commute's easier, but I'm still a Brooklyn girl at heart, I think.
Okay, great.
I know. Not I think. I know.
That's okay. let's open up a little bit with Hadestown and your involvement with it from the beginning, or did you come in later? What's your history with the show?
Yeah. I came in like sort of at the last developmental stage. Prior to the West End engagement, they were seeking a way to sort of develop the workers' chorus. And so a bunch of us, Ahmad Simmons and I, as well as a number of other people who came together, and we helped David Newman put the choreography together. Some of the things made it to the show, like all the lantern stuff. We didn't have lanterns. We just had our hands. We had no idea we'd be carrying like massive metal lighting fixtures. But some of that made it into the show, and obviously other things did not. But it was really cool introduction because I didn't get to see the show downtown. And so just getting to hear the music and like, whoa, what is this show? this is like beyond anything that I'd ever seen before or been a part of before. So,
yeah.
That was my entry point. And then they went to London and I was like, I need to be in this show whenever it comes back. And then they announced like right afterwards that they were planning to take their Broadway bow, and
yeah,
the rest is history. I auditioned like everybody else. Did the papers call that we learned in the workshop, but is not in the show. and yeah.
Well, my next question was going to be if you already had this hunch that the show was going to be special, but just from what you've already said, it seems like you had that intuition that, oh, this is different.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. So Hadestown is actually the first time that I've been an original cast member. So that, I mean, first of all, bucket list item, that was very cool to be able to check off my list. But I really had no way of knowing like, oh, this is going to go to Broadway. I just knew that this is just an awesome piece of theater and piece of art that I think will be meaningful for people. And doesn't necessarily have all the Broadway razzmatazz, but actually is a story that speaks to humanity. Not that there's wrong with a little razzle dazzle, but you know, we need something else every now and then too. Mm-hmm. And I think that more than anything is what I knew that this show had in spades. And I just wanted to be a part of it. Mm. So it was wishful thinking that came true. that it came to Broadway.
Yeah. I formerly directed a play called Eurydice by Sarah Rule. And so I have this like special place in my heart about Orpheus and Eurydice. How much did you know about the story going into it? And once you were cast in the show or the workshop or just that process, how much of that diving into the Greek mythology of it all was a part of the process?
Yeah, it's interesting. I always enjoyed Greek mythology in school, but I definitely would not say I'm an expert by any means. Like it sort of stopped with, I don't know how old you are, but do you remember like Hercules and Xena when they were on television?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yes. That's kind of where it ended. Like that, you know, we learned it in school and then watched some TV shows and then Greek mythologist just sort of stayed back in the 90s, I guess. But I would say on my own, in terms of my own research for the show, I mean, obviously, you know, the dramaturgical team, staff, person of one, made other research available for us to access while we were working on the show, but I sort of did stuff on my own. I was understanding Persephone and the fate, the accordion fate, but ended up going anyway. That's the story we can get to another time. Anyway, I got a retelling of the. I would say it's like the story of Persephone. So it starts all the way from her abduction. When she's brought down to Hades and, you know, we find the story of how she ends up there and how she ends up having to go back and forth. And they talk about Orpheus and Eurydice in this retelling of, you know, Persephone's origin story, if you will. Long story short, it was really great to just revisit all of the stuff that I had learned when I was a kid.
Don't hesitate to make the long stories long, because I know that we're going to have a lot of diehard Hadestown fans watching or listening to this episode. So you were saying something about an accordion or what were you saying?
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Get into it. Go ahead. Get into it.
Yeah. So I covered Fate 3, which is played by the glorious Joelle Blackman. She plays accordion. First of all, we all had to learn how to play the accordion. None of us played before we started. So we learned how to play the accordion for the show. But also, as luck would have it, and, you know, coverage and vacations and weddings and illness, this is pre-COVID, mind you. It just so happened that the right combination of people were out, that I had to learn a different fate in between shows and go on that night. So then I was playing the tambourine and the bells. And at the same time, I was learning, the third fate was added contractually for a short period of time, because they had essentially planned for the situation that happened, but with a different fate. Like, there were two fates out, and our two swings, one of them also had to go on for Eurydice, so there weren't enough fates in the building. So I was relearning how to play the violin, because I played once when I was in fourth grade and had to the things you never knew you would need to know how to do. Play all of the instruments in the world.
Right. I love that. Yeah, just the casual learn a whole new track in between shows. No big deal.
Oh my gosh. You know, that was something I never expected I would have to do in my life. But now that I've done it, I'm like, that's great. I did it. I don't ever have to do that again.
as far as you know, you never know,
as far as I know,
what the future will hold.
That's true.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Let's get into a little bit of the creating the worker chorus and the physicality of it all. I know that there's just from talking to Joelle and also Tim Hughes and some people just about that process and how it was very much just organic and free. Just the creative team really let you all just kind of play during the process. What was that like? And then I eventually want to get into the comparison of like Lion King, because those two are very physical shows, but I'm sure in maybe different ways. And since this is Built for the Stage podcast, it's great to just hear like how you tackled both of those challenges, I'll say, with each show. So what was that like creating the worker chorus?
So, I'm just listening to your question in total, and these are very big topics. So I really have to start with our choreographer. David Newman is a genius. Definitely a choreographer in this industry that I respect, mainly because of the breadth of his knowledge. And his approach to choreography is very much about social dances and what is the movement vocabulary that best serves this story right now. How are ways that we can move our bodies so that we can communicate what is happening emotionally, but also practically? Like, as workers, we're not about to go run around with hammers and mallets, but how are we going to, you know, show that there is hard, you know, work, backbreaking work happening in Hadestown. So I really have a great appreciation for him sort of entering the space with that sort of mindset, of wanting to have human type of movements, not just we're going to do a double here and bop my split. Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to bop my split ever, but maybe that's in somebody else's show. But it didn't have to be in our show. And I will second wholeheartedly just how collaborative a process this was. And that's with David, that's with Rachel, it's with really everybody. And I never had been in a situation really where everybody's creative genius was valued and was listened to, was encouraged. And then the best idea won. You know, it wasn't a I'm in charge, do what I say, dumb actor kind of situation. It was more like, no, how do we as a collective tell the best possible version of this timeless epic, you know? Yeah. So that was really special to be able cool. to do. And like I said earlier, the movement vocabulary was very much like social dance based. So lots of kind of house movement, sort of b-boy style movement. There are some African influences. There are other things that are just go like this, like you're marching like a worker, yeah. you know, as opposed to a Lion King, for example, which, by the way, is a cast of thousands as opposed to five workers, chorus people. Uh-huh. But I would say, you know, especially with the traditional setup of a Lion King where there is a dancing chorus and a singing chorus, there's really the opportunity for the choreographer to be able to let the dancers dance. And so that's why you had, you know, Ailey dancers. But, you know, former Ailey dancers, Philadanko, Ron K. Brown, all sorts of like contemporary company representation on the stage at Lion King. Mm. And then for the singing chorus, it was more movement-based that sort of elicit an animalistic feel. Yeah. They also tried to, I would also say that there was a different sort of cultural influence. There's a lot of like Balinese movement, particularly with the lions. This is Kung Fu, sorry. But in terms of like having, you know, different things that are going on.
Right.
To tap into more animalistic styles of movement. And then lastly, I'll say in terms of, you know, asking about being built for the stage, that was a totally different thing.
Yeah.
Like in Hadestown, we live in a plié. In Lion King, you need to make sure that your arms and your back and your neck and your glutes and everything are strong enough to be able to hold those puppets.
Yeah.
So you can stand there for 3 minutes with with plywood on your, well, not plywood, but something similar on your head, balanced on your head. So, or, you know, in my case where I understudied Nala, Shenzi, and Aunt Sarabi, but, you know, she essentially was the same as my normal track. Plus in my normal track, I had these bird puppets. So we spend all of Circle of Life like this with puppets in our hands and we're shaking. So it's all of those animals have different styles of movement. Shenzi has four legs, so I have to walk, you know, quadruped walking and just figuring out how to be able to do all of that healthfully, but also being able to do it in a moment's notice. So that required a lot of a different kind of maintenance, body maintenance,
yeah.
I would say.
In Hadestown, what were you when the show was running and now when it's going to be coming back, what were you having to do physically to either prepare for your show or cool down for it or do PT or whatnot when you weren't up there? How was that to just kind of keep the machine oiled?
Mm-hmm. It sort of depend on who I was on for more. I'll start with the smaller thing. If I had to go on for a duel, that accordion is a very interesting sort of range of movement. Because you're essentially playing the piano side up and down on this side, but then you're doing all of this sort of range of movement to push and pull the, I don't know what the, it's been almost 2 years. I don't know what this part of the instrument is, but the pushy pulley part,
yeah,
can really get to your back and your shoulders if it's not, you know, laying right.
Sure.
Especially when, you know, you're having to adjust the instrument to your body because you're wearing it, and putting it on quickly and taking it off quickly or dancing while playing. Yeah, I would say that some PT focused on that.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned, with the workers' chorus, we live in a plié all the time. So just making sure like my trunk and my core were really loose and open. There was a lot of stretching beforehand and doing a lot of hip flexor exercises. There's a portion of the show where we had to balance tables, so like heavy tables, on our legs and have them like tip to the side, like they're moving magically,
mm-hmm.
which it is magic, but also it's a lot on your thighs and your hip flexors. If you haven't stretched or strengthened them. And so that was a lot of PT for that, particularly cool. Early on.
I'll be on the lookout for that when I see the show this fall. It's on my first three to check off the list. So I'll be on the lookout for that table trick.
Oh yes, it's a split second. You may miss it if you're not looking.
Okay, all right, all right. Let's get into Broadway Serves a little bit and talk a bit about what you are into off the stage. You're a founder of Broadway Serves. I'd love for you to just give us a little bit of a description or synopsis of what it is and what brought you to create it and anything you want to share about it.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, I'm one of the co-founders of Broadway Serves along with Dion Figgins and Dana Marie Ingram. Also fabulous actresses on Broadway. We met back in 2012, actually. We all attended the Million Hoodie March following the murder of Trayvon Martin. Mm-hmm. And it happened to be a march that we could do between shows. I was in Sister Act at the time, and they're in Spider-Man and Memphis, I think, was still open then. I think that's what Dion was doing. Anyway, so we went between shows, went to this rally, and we're just so inspired by the community coming together for the sake of community. And we wanted to find a way where we could engage the rest of the theatrical community to engage with their human side. And we felt that the best way for us to do that was to provide community service opportunities to professional theater makers and, you know, extended to family and friends and all of that. But that's essentially what we do. We provide theater professionals with community service opportunities. In our many years of service, we've done all sorts of stuff in New York City. We have a touring division where, you know, we have liaisons with the different tours who will connect with different organizations across the country so that the people in their shows can serve. We also have a kid serve program so that all the kid performers can not only interact with each other, so they're not, you know, siloed in their own shows, but they can also give back and learn about giving back, you know, early on. And again, you know, the emphasis is really on being, how can we be of service to the community, and how can we engage in our most basic of selves, which is as a human being. So that's Broadway Serves in a nutshell.
All right. Well, if you're listening out there and you're inspired by that mission, go to Instagram at Bway Serves, give them a follow, and see what they have coming up next. Or if you want to reach out directly, you can email them at info@BroadwayServes.org and check out the website, BroadwayServes.org. I'm going to put that in the description of the episode as well. So if you didn't have a pen and paper, you can just simply pull up the description and copy paste that into your web browser. Kimberly, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for just taking the time to chat. It's been a pleasure to meet you.
Yes, it's been great meeting you too. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. All right, everyone. That was Kimberly Marable. Make sure you give her a follow on the gram. We'll have her handle in the description of the episode as well. And yeah, this is Joe Roscoe with Built for the Stage. Another great episode. Hopefully you enjoyed it. We'll catch you for the next one. Later.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.